that's a dangerous road to go down when we think that can be toyed with lightly.
The legislature votes to roll back part of the cruise ship initiative. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, February 19th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, municipal leaders descend on the state capitol to lobby for local projects.
You hear all these things about how you're supposed to talk to people and what you're supposed to say and what you're not supposed to say, and I'm pretty homegrown for that.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Join Alaska bars and restaurants from every corner of the state in taking a stand against secondhand smoke. The fact of the matter is, no Alaskan, employee, or customer should suffer the heart disease and lung cancer due to secondhand smoke. The benefits are undeniably positive for Alaskans and for the bottom line. Clean indoor air. It's good for health, and it's great for business. For more information on smoke-free workplaces, visit alaskatca.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance.
Anchorage police shot and killed a man they were pursuing earlier today. The man who died is 25-year-old Carl Richard Bowie of the III of Anchorage. KSKA's Daisha Eaton has more.
The incident started around 10 a.m. when the Anchorage Police Department received a call about a man prowling around cars at the Diamond Center parking lot. Officers followed the man who was driving a truck that was reported stolen from a Southwest Anchorage neighborhood Tuesday morning. Officers attempted to stop the vehicle, but the driver continued into a residential neighborhood in South Anchorage. Anchorage Police Chief Mark Muse says that's when officers fired.
The suspect vehicle apparently turned around in the cul-de-sac, rammed a patrol car, then rammed another patrol car, and at some point two officers fired at the vehicle and driver. Both were struck. The vehicle lost control and ended up in its current position in a driveway. The driver was killed.
The driver was pronounced dead at the scene at 10:52 a.m. A female passenger inside the vehicle was uninjured and taken into custody. This case is still under investigation. The police department's policy is not to release names of the officers involved in a shooting for 3 days. In Anchorage, I'm Daisha Eaton.
The first bill to land on Governor Sean Parnell's desk will be one that he introduced. The measure relaxes regulations on cruise ships and lets them use mixing zones when they release waste. By doing that, it strikes down part of a citizens' initiative requiring vessels to meet clean water standards at the point of discharge. Minority Democrats in the Senate cited that as a reason for opposing the bill during their floor speeches. Senator Johnny Ellis, who represents an Anchorage district, said his constituents had concerns about the legislature rolling back a measure that they had voted on.
These were not environmentalists. They were not part of the conservation, organized conservation community. They were regular Alaskans who participated in the Citizens Initiative. And encouraged me in no uncertain terms to be very, very cautious about overturning citizens' initiatives. That's a dangerous road to go down when we think that can be toyed with lightly.
Senator Liesl McGuire, a Republican from Anchorage and a supporter of the bill, responded that some voters might have misunderstood what the initiative actually required. She says the original initiative used charged language to describe the way cruise ships processed their wastewater.
When you sit back and look at voter psychology, when people go into the ballot booths, it's not clear that voters always understand what they're voting on, to be honest. Alaskans are very smart, savvy people, intellectuals, but a lot of it comes down to the information that they're presented with as they go into that booth.
Debate also focused on impacts to the state's fisheries. Conservation groups, tribal organizations, and some members of the fishing industry had come out in opposition to the bill. The bill ultimately passed the Senate on a 14-6 vote. Senator Lyman Hoffman, a Democrat from Bethel, joined the majority in approving the measure. The bill passed the House earlier this month on similar party lines. About 100 officials from cities and towns across the state met in Juneau last week for the Alaska Municipal League Conference. Part of the conference involved lobbying state lawmakers for funding for local projects. In Sitka, officials are hoping for more than $40 million to fund an important hydroelectric expansion project. That might be more money than the state is willing to fund in a lean budget year. But as Sitka leaders found out, it's always worth a try. KCAW's Ed Ronco reports.
Just after 9 a.m., Sitka Assemblymember Phyllis Hackett walks up to the Alaska Capitol.
I feel like I'm heading to a funeral. It all in black, that is.
that's not a predictor for the day.
Oh no. My gosh, no. Are you kidding me? I'm way too optimistic for that.
Hackett is wearing a business suit, less common on the streets of Sitka than it is in Juneau, and hoping to put the city's best foot forward. She's with Mayor Mim McConnell, Municipal Administrator Jim Dinley, and Government Relations Director Marlene Campbell. Wow. The elevator stops on the third floor.
That's probably
kind of exciting.
Today's first meeting is with Lieutenant Governor Meade Treadwell. About 100 local officials from across the state are doing the exact same thing on this rainy Thursday at the end of the Alaska Municipal League's winter conference. During the meetings, each tries to convince a lawmaker why their own community's needs should take priority. Stephanie Scott is the mayor of Haines.
Yesterday, I had the opportunity to talk to Lieutenant Governor Meade Treadwell, and I said to him, "Lieutenant Governor, I live on the only toll road in Alaska, and it's called the Inside Passage, and we need a vessel to drive on that road."
Her priority on this trip is the Alaska Class Ferry. Plans for a 350-foot vessel were unexpectedly changed by Governor Sean Parnell, who opted instead for two smaller vessels.
The representatives and senators need to know that they're not operating in a vacuum, that their constituencies are out there thinking and learning and questioning and suggesting, so that it really is a process, a democratic process.
Sitka's priority on this trip is to get funding for the Blue Lake Dam. The city is raising the height of the dam by 83 feet. Bids for construction came in way above engineers' estimates, nearly double the cost, in fact. And that has left the city scrambling for money.
Hi, I'm Phyllis Hackett from Sitka.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
We have a meeting down here.
Yeah. We're outside the office of State Representative Kathy Munoz, a Juneau Republican. Hackett is a few minutes early. As we wait for the rest of Sitka's delegation to show up, I ask her how the day has gone so far.
A little intimidating to begin with, but we're getting there.
And this is Hackett's first time lobbying on behalf of the city.
You hear all these things about how you're supposed to talk to people and what you're supposed to say and what you're not supposed to say, and yeah, I'm pretty homegrown for that.
Hackett says the meetings have gone well and that legislators have been receptive to at least hearing about Blue Lake.
At least there hasn't been anybody closing the door in our face or yawning while we're talking, so...
So far, the state has kicked in nearly $50 million for Blue Lake, about half of the initial cost of the project. Half of the city's current request would be about $20 million.
The chance of getting $20 million in this year's capital budget is near zero.
Bert Stedman represents Sitka in the state Senate. He's sitting in a rocking chair at the end of a conference table in his office, and he says there are a few factors working against Blue Lake. The capital budget, which funds one-time projects, is going to be much smaller this year. Legislators also aren't very likely to advocate for a big-ticket project that could take money out of their own districts. But even within a district, the competition for money is fierce. Stedman taps on a nearby notebook with all of the capital budget requests for his Senate district.
So what, a 2.5-inch binder or something like that? It's got to be a good 2 inches of paper, and that's not a backup. Each couple sheets is a separate project.
Still, Stedman says it is not a pointless trip for the Sitkins or for other local officials who hope to help their communities. Even if Blue Lake doesn't get much money this year, energy is a huge concern across the entire state. And Stedman says it's good for legislators to know the whole picture. But still, what about those long odds? Why spend time meeting with legislators about something that seems unlikely to happen?
Never make assumptions.
Sitka Mayor Mim McConnell.
That's basically, don't make assumptions. So we went in there with the hope that maybe somehow we'll be able to get some funding.
McConnell says they told legislators that if nothing happens and the city has to bond for the entire project, electrical rates could rise by as much as 60%. They told legislators that two new businesses in Sitka have to make their products using propane because there's just not enough electricity. And they said that a third, a proposed fish waste processing plant, called off plans to build in Sitka because it wouldn't have had enough electricity.
You know, obviously nobody made any promises, but we got a lot of sympathy. And it was sincere sympathy.
McConnell says she's willing to make another visit if it will help, but that for now, it's time to watch and wait. Reporting from Juneau, I'm Ed Ronco.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a Wrangell cafe takes a unique approach to charity.
I think it's the coolest idea that our little town of Wrangell has a restaurant that wants to give back to something bigger than themselves.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
You have the power to help others when you file online for your PFD. It's easy to share a little of your PFD through Pick, Click, Give. You can make a real difference and support causes that matter most to you, from feeding the hungry, supporting youth in education, or sustaining the arts. Learn more at pickclickgive.org. This message is sponsored by the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority and ConocoPhillips.
The defendant in the double slaying at the Coast Guard Communication Station in Kodiak made his first court appearance today. James Wells pleaded not guilty during his arraignment in U.S. District Court in Anchorage. Wells is accused in the April deaths of James Hopkins and Richard Belisle on Kodiak Island. He is charged with two counts of first-degree murder, two counts of killing federal officers or employees, and related weapons charges. Charging documents allege that Wells shot the men multiple times and then staged his alibi. According to court documents, he was facing disciplinary action at work before the killings took place. Federal prosecutors say they could seek the death penalty in the case. Alaska's congressional delegation has introduced new Sea Alaska land selection bills. Senator Lisa Murkowski authored her chamber's version, which is co-sponsored by Senator Mark Begich. Congressman Don Young released the House version. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
Both measures would turn about 70,000 acres of the Tongass National Forest over to Sea Alaska, the regional native corporation for Southeast. Murkowski's version includes numerous changes meant to reduce opposition from environmental groups, tourism businesses, and small communities. She says it would still complete a promise made 40 years ago by the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act.
In terms of what we set out to do, which is to provide completion to Sea Alaska in terms of allowing them to select their lands that were committed, this will help finalize that selection and really, I think, work to balance the interests of all those in the region.
Both bills transfer about 68,000 acres to Sea Alaska for timber harvest or development. They remove about 26,000 controversial acres on or near northern Prince of Wales Island and replace them with similar parcels elsewhere. Sea Alaska General Counsel and Vice President Jaylene Arujo says the new acreage is near some previously logged areas.
There was some infrastructure already in place in North Prince of Wales, so we had to find other alternatives that had proximity to infrastructure that would be helpful in timber development.
The Southeast Alaska Conservation Council, an umbrella environmental group, has been critical of past legislation. SEAC attorney Buck Lindekugel says he hasn't seen Young's bill and is still going through Murkowski's measure, but he sees some significant improvements.
Senator Murkowski has shown some solid leadership and tried to address some thorny issues that were raised by Southeast Alaskans. There's a lot of bittersweet stuff here, particularly with some of the timberlands. No one's going to be happy with all of them, but both Sea Alaska and Senator Murkowski helped avoid some real controversial places.
He says SEAC will run the bills by its membership and board before taking a formal position. The Alaska Forest Association backs the legislation. Executive Director Owen Graham says Murkowski's version makes too many concessions, but he says the group will go along with them because the land needs to be transferred to keep Southeast's logging industry alive.
We're holding our nose on the conservation areas. We don't think there's anything special about them. They're certainly not needed because there's other protections in place for the land, but we're willing to accept those conservation areas in order to get this bill done quickly.
Both bills make major cuts to the number of small parcels set aside for tourism, energy, or other economic development. That includes a geothermal energy parcel in Upper Tenneke Inlet. The bills also reduce opportunities to select cultural sites and require a more lengthy and cumbersome process to take ownership. Murkowski's version increases the required stream buffer zone from 66 to 100 feet. That's to increase protections to some salmon spawning areas. It also balances Sea Alaska's timber selections with 150,000 acres of conservation areas. Don Young spokesman Michael Anderson says that's where his version is different.
The House bill doesn't contain any conservation set-asides. Though the two bills convey the same overall acreage to Sea Alaska, the House bill includes a few more small parcels. The House bill does not include any buffer requirements beyond what is required in the Alaska Forest Practices Act.
Those differences make the House version closer to the original bill before more sacred and future sites were removed and some of the timber acreage changed. Sea Alaska's Arujo says either version works for the corporation. This is Ed Schoenfeld reporting in Juneau.
A Wrangell cafe is combating hunger. For about 13 weeks per year, it donates its Monday night profits to a charity that works to end child hunger in the United States. On those nights, it also gives patrons a good meal for whatever they are willing to pay. KSTK's Shady Grove Oliver has more.
Monday night we have a fundraiser. It's called Pay What You Can. The special tonight is either Alfredo or Scampi. This explains it.
It's Monday night dinner at Zach's Cafe. Catherine George Bird, one of the owners, greets guests when they arrive and tells them the evening's menu.
We don't serve anything but what the special is.
Okay.
She hands them a piece of paper that explains why there are limited options. It's because she and her husband, co-owner James George, took a trip to Washington.
We were in Seattle about 5 years ago, and there was a news story on a restaurant that because times were so tough, they were doing one night a week just to get people out with a pay what you can. The menu is whatever the chef makes, and you give whatever you can. If you can 1 week, you can. If you can't the next week, you can't. It was more to encourage people just to get out and about.
They came back to Wrangell and started up a weekly Pay What You Can night in Zach's Cafe. But, she says, they put their own twist on it.
We kind of turned around, made it our own, and made it a fundraiser, and have picked different charities that we save all the money for the 12 or 13 weeks and send it to a charity.
They've owned Zach's Cafe for 13 years. They've done local one-night-only fundraisers in the past for organizations like the Animal Shelter. But the long-term idea behind Pay What You Can means they have more time to raise money. The first charity was Heifer International. That's an organization that donates farm animals to people in struggling countries. The animals provide both nutritious food and profitable goods, like eggs and milk, that can be sold by the owners. However, Bird says, after a few years, they wanted to find a way to help more locally. In this case, local meant the U.S.-based organization Share Our Strength.
We actually didn't realize how bad the childhood hunger in the U.S. was until we started looking into it. I think it said 6 million children in the U.S. don't know where their next meal is coming from. One-third of those children are under the age of 5, and it was just amazing to us that this was going on in our own country, and that's why we switched over from Heifer to Share Our Strength.
The patrons donate the money for the meal. Bird says she and her husband donate the cost of the food and the labor to make it. That's why they make things that are easy to cook in large batches.
We did fried chicken. Sometimes we do like jumbo burgers, and then we have an assortment of things you can have put on your burger. That's always a good one. We like to do a pizza buffet where we set up the banquet table and James just stands back there making pizza, and I bring it out and you help yourself till you're full. We like doing a salad and soup buffet, which is the same thing. Make a bunch of salads, a couple different kinds of soup, and you help yourself till you're full.
Tonight is pasta night. Father Thomas Weiss is sitting at a table by the window. He says he loves eating at Zach's on Mondays.
I think it's the coolest idea that our little town of Wrangell has a restaurant that wants to give back to something bigger than themselves.
And giving back is what it's about. Bird says she wants everyone to feel welcome to come and enjoy a meal on Pay What You Can nights.
Whatever they have is fine. Whatever they have, if they don't have anything, it's fine. I've actually had somebody come in with 50 cents in their pocket. I had somebody come in with a dollar. It's all fine. That's part of what this is getting people to be able to come out and eat and socialize
Pay What You Can will continue at Zach's Cafe most Monday nights through May. Reporting in Wrangell, I'm Shady Grove Oliver.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, extending its support of Alaska residents beyond banking by supporting the programming of public radio throughout Alaska, giving back to the community. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far. The Medallion Foundation and the Federal Aviation Administration set standards for the operation of aircraft and airports and provide services to the flying public. Passengers are influential in making flying safer in Alaska. When passengers know their rights and responsibilities, aviation is safer for everyone. Safety information online at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation.
The Iditarod Trail Sled Dog Race is fast approaching. If you've wondered what all those Iditarod race volunteers eat, APRN's Ellen Lockyer found out during a visit to an Anchorage warehouse where supplies were getting packed up for flights to Squintna, Nome, and other checkpoints along the Thousand Mile Trail.
Hefty snowflakes dropped from a leaden sky last week, setting an appropriate backdrop for Iditarod volunteers scurrying to get ready for the big race. Inside a cavernous airland transport warehouse in Anchorage, workers filled and stacked cardboard boxes in piles higher than my head. Much ado is made over the dog food supplies along the trail, but volunteers have to eat too. 23 Iditarod checkpoints after Willow are stocked to provide meals for race officials and all the people who help the race succeed. So supplies of instant mashed potatoes, cans of chili, frozen veggies, canned corn, crackers, and kitchen essentials are carefully packed in cardboard boxes and taped shut. Each stack is marked by a yellow sign flagging the destination of the food packages. Cindy Fritz stocks the Squintna checkpoint.
We're just here helping out to pack food for all the checkpoints, but mainly for our checkpoint, Squintna.
And how many people are you providing food for?
Our crew is 35, and the night of the race we serve about 300 people because we make a big meal for the mushers. Dinner, and then it turns into breakfast, and all the press and Iditarod officials and whoever's there.
What's on the menu?
We call it musher stew. It's beef stew soup concoction. Depending on what we get today is what'll be in it.
Some years food is donated, but this year the Iditarod is paying for all of it, according to Pat Owens, the Iditarod's people food coordinator.
Even McGrath feed as many as 70 in a meal. So, and then it's this, the group of people move up the trail, so they'll eat meals at different places. You have vets and checkers and all those trail people that come up. So, yeah, lots of people.
Who's cooking it?
Volunteers. They go out to the checkpoints. Some of them do this every year, and sometimes it's different people, so.
Owens handles the Nome checkpoint. This year's Iditarod starts March 2nd in Anchorage. 67 mushers are hitting the trail to Nome. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
A recent episode of the popular cooking show Top Chef Seattle was filmed in Juneau. The show was taped last August at various locations around the capital city. Some Juneau residents were actually employed to help on set, but everyone was contractually prohibited from saying anything about it, even acknowledging that it ever happened. KTOO's Matt Miller has this report on their experience.
What's up, ladies? Ready to go to Alaska?
Ready to go to Alaska.
Alaska, here we come.
It was frequently called Juno's worst-kept secret when crew members, chef contestants, and judges arrived last August for the week-and-a-half production of Top Chef.
Your quickfire is simple. Take this near-flawless ingredient and make it shine in a dish.
Location scouts earlier had checked out various locations around town. The owner of Tracy's Crab Shack, Tracy LaBarge, says they were told a week ahead of time that producers were coming, but actually being selected as a site for a cooking challenge? That was last minute.
So we actually opened for the day, and we were getting ready to open and start serving, and they just swarmed in and called us and said, we're going to be there, and so we shut down, and that was it.
The state contributed $190,000, and the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, which gets much of its funding from self-assessment of the commercial fleet, kicked in about $60,000 for the production. State, ASME, and Juneau Convention and Visitors Bureau officials all say they helped with location scouting or tracking down props and set dressings. JCVB's Elizabeth Arnett says they also suggested Juneau residents to sample the food during a cooking challenge at the Gold Creek Salmon Bake. She estimates that Omission Productions from Los Angeles brought in about 125 crew members and put them up in three hotels.
It was a huge influx of money in August for Juneau from this production.
In addition to Tracy's Crab Shack, the Governor's House, and Jorgensen Bed and Breakfast, production crews also set up cameras at Thunder Mountain High School, Eagle Crest Ski Area, Safeway, and Alaska Glacier Seafoods in Auk Bay. Here's show host Padma Lakshmi during the judging of a chef contestant at the Salmon Bake.
The locals never use chum. It's what they use to feed the dogs. But they thought that yours was very delicious.
Luke Fanning says it was so delicious that it was actually his favorite. A Juneau banker and commercial gill netter, Fanning and his wife sampled all the dishes served up during the cooking challenge.
It was really a lot of fun. Both of us are really interested in telling the story of Alaska seafood and that it's wild and sustainable and pure, and we think it's a great product. And so we were just really excited to learn that Alaska seafood was going to be showcased on a national scale.
Fanning and his wife signed non-disclosure agreements preventing them from saying anything about the production until this month, along with 100 other Juneau participants and a handful of business owners like Tracy LaBarge.
Just dying to tell people and just trying to encode, you know, watch TV, watch this channel, you know, but we can't really say anything. It was fun. It was really fun.
LaBarge can now tell anybody she wants about when Top Chef came to Juneau, an experience that will likely give her business a certain cachet among food-loving visitors this summer. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Matt Miller.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Daisha Eaton and Ellen Lockyer in Anchorage, Ed Ronco, Ed Schoenfeld, and Matt Miller in Juneau, and Shady Grove Oliver in Wrangell. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez reported from Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
BP, supporting public broadcasting in Alaska. Every day, people all over Alaska are discovering that public transportation can benefit their businesses and their communities. Public transportation in Alaska provides 7 million rides a year to work, medical appointments, shopping, school, and social opportunities. There's more information at alaskamobility.org. This message sponsored by the nonprofit organizations Alaska Mobility Coalition and the American Public Transportation Association.
Join in the excitement and the love of art at the Alaska Public Television Art Auction. Take a look at the paintings, drawings, mixed media, and sculptures from Alaskan artists online at alaskapublic.org. Be sure to watch KAKM Channel 7 for the Alaska Public Television Art Auction starting Thursday night from 7 until 10. And join us in the studio Friday and Saturday. All proceeds benefit KSKA, APRN, and Alaska Public Television. Information at alaskapublic.org.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.